नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, text number 50. This is the chapter chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. Purare chakka sambhigna.
Purare chakka sambhigna.
Bali. Valigu dalhodaram Pati shankramayat vishvan Nabhyavata gabhiraya Purhari chakka sambhigna Vali valgu dalhodaram Pithi shankramayad vishvan Nabhyavata gabhiraya Purhari chakka sambhigna Vali valgu dalhodaram Pithi shankramayad vishvan Navyavata Gaviraya Pura inhaling Rechaka exhaling Sambhigna agitated Vali the wrinkles on the abdomen Valgu beautiful Dala, like the banyan leaf. Udaram, abdomen. Pati shankramayat, coiling down. Vishvam, universe. Nabaya, navel. Avata, screwing. Gabiraya, by deepness. Translation. The Lord's abdomen is beautiful due to three ripples in the flesh. Being so round, his abdomen resembles the leaf of a banyan tree. And when he exhales and inhales, the movement of the ripples appears very, very beautiful. The coils within the navel of the Lord are so deep that it appears that the entire universe sprouted out of it and yet again wishes to go back. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The whole universe is born out of the lotus stem which sprouted from the navel of the Lord. Lord Brahma sat on top of this lotus stem to create the whole universe. The navel of the Lord is so deep and coiling that it appears that the whole universe again wants to withdraw into the navel, being attracted by the Lord's beauty. The Lord's navel and the ripples on his belly always increase the beauty of his bodily features. The details of the bodily features of the Lord especially indicate the personality of Godhead. Impersonalists cannot appreciate the beautiful body of the Lord, which is described in these prayers by Lord Shiva. Although the impersonalists are always engaged in the worship of Lord Shiva, they are unable to understand the prayers offered by Lord Shiva to the bodily features of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is known as Shiva Varinchinutam in the Bhagavatam 11.5.33. For he is always worshipped by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So, here we're reading these prayers of Lord Shiva. And you know, the question I always ask, that because being a Hare Krishna, of course you'll come across a lot of Shiva worshippers. So I always have some questions for them. Especially if they appear to know everything. Especially. Very simple questions, actually, but never answered. Answered by a devotee very easily, but others cannot. And so, now Prabhupada mentions here that impersonalists cannot appreciate the beautiful body of the Lord, which is described in these prayers by Lord Shiva. Although the impersonalists are always engaged in the worship of Lord Shiva, they are unable to understand the prayers offered by Lord Shiva to the bodily features of the Lord Vishnu. So, you know, this is the fascinating thing to me, of course, is that Lord Shiva has been worshipped. Well, in, you know, as far as people know history, as long, thousands of years, as long as you can go back in history, they've been worshipping Lord Shiva. From the scriptures, it's from the beginning of creation. So, you would expect if you ask a simple question, that they just you'd get an answer. But you know, if you ask, Lord Shiva is always sitting in meditation, deep thought, deep meditation. What is he meditating on? And I've only ever got a blank expression from that question. Now, after thousands and thousands of years of worship, you would think that there'd be even a vague idea. But there's nothing, you know, it's just a blank. Yet, the same persons who, you know, there's a void of knowledge about Lord Shiva, they will, you know, swear on their mother's grave, you know, an Aussie expression, that Lord Shiva is supreme, although they really know nothing about him. So, you know, how that comes about, you know, I find that it's quite fascinating. So there's been no investigation. It's a tradition, you know, that, you know, I was born in such and such a village, my parents worship Lord Shiva, their parents worship Lord Shiva, their parents worship Lord Shiva, and so, until my dying breath, I will worship Lord Shiva as supreme. Not just worshipping Lord Shiva, but as supreme. You ask why, and there is very little information. Now, even more interesting is that even the great Jnanis, those who are the gurus of the people with no knowledge, as is explained here, these impersonalists, great Jnanis, which proliferate in India, they cannot appreciate the beautiful body of the Lord, which is described in these prayers of Lord Shiva. Although the impersonalists are always engaged in worship of Lord Shiva, they are unable to understand the prayers offered by Lord Shiva to the bodily features of Vishnu. So, you know, Krishna, of course, Krishna summarizes all the teachings of Vedic knowledge, all the teachings about Lord Shiva, the demigods, himself in his manifestation as Vishnu, creation, time, all the Vedic knowledge, everything that is to be known within the Vedas about the whole material and spiritual creation, he summarizes that in the Bhagavad Gita. And his understanding of the Vedas, his knowledge of the Vedas, is accepted by all the great scholars, including Sankaracharya, who's the absolute leader of the impersonalists, as the essential and greatest teaching on Vedic knowledge. That there is no... his knowledge of the Vedas is accepted, that there is no authority above Krishna on the Vedas. Because what Krishna did in the Gita, which no one else has ever done, this is what Srila Prabhupada explains, no one else has ever done this, that he took the entire body of the Vedic knowledge and summarized it. So that's not easily done, because first you've got to, you know, even if you find the rare few people who know thoroughly the entire body of the Vedas, you know, you don't find such a person. Very, very rare. You know, some people, you know, read a little here and a little there. They've heard a few things from grandma. They've seen a few things on the DVD, you know, and they've heard a few things as they're, you know, down at the markets. But, you know, their understanding of the entire body of Vedic knowledge, that's not there. So, but Krishna understood that. And then he was able to, you know, summarize that what is the most important part. So that's very difficult in itself. You know, to take something which is very rarely understood and then to understand the essence of it and to summarize it. But not only did he summarize it, he summarized it in his own words. So he didn't take this summary from somewhere, you know. This is his own, you know, creation, Gita. He didn't take it from someone else. As Srila Prabhupada said, he actually didn't, you know, we know that Krishna accepted a guru, but he didn't learn Bhagavad Gita from his guru. You know, he learned the Vedas from the guru. The Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's creation himself. That, as, you know, that he has... After thoroughly, you know, he accepted a guru to show that everyone should accept a guru. But when he spoke Bhagavad Gita, that's what he, in his own words, that wasn't like the guru has said, you know, here is Bhagavad Gita, you know, learn this. No, that's Krishna's, you know, speaking in his own words. So that's, so no one has ever done that. And that Bhagavad Gita, you know, the greatest of the acharyas have studied since the time of Krishna And they all accept that this is the most deepest, wonderful understanding and description of the essential teachings of the Vedas. So they all unanimously agree. So the Gita is very, and therefore, in the Gita Mahatmya, so Shankaracharya has a Gita Mahatmya where he describes the glories of the Gita in many, many wonderful verses. And also Suta Goswami, who's heard, the professor of the, especially the Puranic teachings of the Vedas. And in the Gita Mahatma, it describes that the Vedas are like the, we can, describe the Vedas to be like a cow. And that, so if we take knowledge to be like the grass, so the cow gathers all the knowledge, it's all the grass is all gathered up in the cow. All the essential knowledge, that's which is actually knowledge, all there. The cow embodies, the knowledge. But then when the cow digests all the knowledge, it produces milk. So, but to get milk, you need a cow herd, a boy. Cows don't milk themselves. Of course, the calves can milk a cow. But generally, cows are looked after by, a cow herds person, because, cows produce more milk than even what the calves can have. So, there's a huge excess of milk. And the cow herds, they milk. So Krishna is like the cow herd boy, and he milks the cow of the Vedas. And Arjun is like the calf. So sometimes, even after the calf has had their fill, if there is, there's more milk, then we keep the calf close by, and then the cow still keeps giving, like that. So Arjun is like the calf, in one sense. And Krishna has milked the cow of the Vedas, and he got the essential form of the Vedic knowledge in the milk. And so that is the usable part of knowledge. Right? So in other words, there's a lot of knowledge, but it has to be put in a usable form. We can't just go out and graze in the grass. Prabhupada once said that, you can't just get your wife, get her to eat grass and produce milk. It's quite funny, sure, Prabhupada. But it's the usable part. And so that milk is the, we take that knowledge and it's put in an essential, the essence of all the goodness of the herbs and the grasses, it's all in that milk. So that is the Bhagavad Gita. That is the Bhagavad Gita. He's taken all that knowledge, assimilated by the cow. The cow has digested it and put it in a usable form, and Krishna has derived that. And then, in the presence of Arjun, for the benefit of Arjun, like that. So this is, something quite extraordinary. And so in the Gita, you'll find that there are things, that there's a conversation about the Vedas which flows from the beginning of what one should understand to the ultimate conclusion of what one should understand. So it's a narrative. So he's put the Vedas in such a way that, there's it can be understood in the simplest terms, But he takes you to the very essential, highest conclusion of Vedic knowledge in that one little narrative, in a summary. So everything is there. Of course, Bhagavad Gita, as mentioned by Krishna, is, you know, presented to the Raja Rishis. Raja Rishis means that they are both very, very elevated saintly people. You know, they're capable of understanding the highest transcendental knowledge because of their saintly qualities, and you know, their entire life is dedicated to the pursuit of transcendental knowledge and the practice of that transcendental knowledge, life after life, in the association of others. So they're sadhus. But Rajarishis are also great kings, which means that those sadhus also have a duty to present that knowledge, to guide society through that knowledge. That society will benefit and prosper both materially and spiritually if that knowledge is the whole social, philosophical, political, economic system. Everything you can think of is all based upon that knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. So it is meant for the Raja Rishis. So Prabhupada says that, you know, it's not meant for the loafer class. Yeah, the loafers. That, you know, it's meant for very, very elevated. Therefore, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to the sun god. Speaking Bhagavad Gita to the sun god is very important because his son is Manu, Vaivasvata Manu. And then Manu has the duty that the medium between the Supreme Lord, represented by the demigods, and how that is, and the cooperation between the Supreme Lord, the demigods who are managing the universe, and humankind. So Manu has that very important role. And so that knowledge comes down from the sun god to Vivishvam, his son. So Krishna spoke to the sun god, it comes down to Manu, and then Manu gives the codes of how we exist in this world for humankind. And each Manu rules, of course, for 71 cycles of the four yugas. So, and there are 14 Manus in one day at Brahma, and that adds up to one day at Brahma, therefore adds up to 4 billion years. 4,300,000 years on day of Brahma, and his night is the same. And each of the Manus will be presenting they will have an understanding of the Vedic knowledge coming through the Supreme Personality of God. It appears once in a day for Brahma, and that knowledge is given. So Bhagavad Gita is presented to such very elevated personalities, and yet when Krishna appears, he appears once in a day of Brahma just before the Kali Yuga. And the Bhagavad Gita, knowing that in Kali Yuga people can't study the Vedas. You know, people are very lazy spiritually. They're very foolish. They're prone to be cheated and deceived. So, and, you know, they have... you know, spiritual life for most people in Kali Yuga is like a five-minute affair, occasionally. You know. So, you know, Bhagavad Gita is actually meant for people in the Kali Yuga that you can easily understand. You can't study the Vedas, so we'll just give you everything in a nutshell. You've got 5 minutes. If you can hear a sadhu for 5 minutes, you know, from the Bhagavad Gita, you'll probably get enough to take you back to Godhead. So this is the expertise of Krishna. He's presented all that Vedic knowledge, which is very rarely understood, presented that which is then distributed through great Raja Rishis. But that same knowledge is meant ultimately to be read daily or heard daily by the general mass of people. They're very, very expert. So that's like, you know, Einstein presenting the theory of relativity. I mean, if Einstein could present the theory of relativity to a three-year-old, you may be getting close to a concept of what Krishna did. So, you know, he hasn't given, okay, they're in Kali Yuga, we'll give them the, you know, they can't understand anything, they're almost like animals, what can you teach them, you know. No, we'll give them the highest. Because, why is that? They live a very short lives. You try and teach them the Vedas, they don't even live long enough to hear it once. You know, the Vedic knowledge. They'll forget it in 2 minutes. Their minds will be distracted. You actually have to give them what they need to know straight away. Maybe, you know, the chance that they take to hear a devotee, that 5 minutes, maybe they're, you know, if they don't accept it then, in that 5 minutes, they may never accept it in their life. It has to be so simple that they can grasp it very quickly and they're attracted to it. So, you know, what Krishna did in, it's the intelligence of Krishna, not just in what he presented as the highest knowledge, which is, you know, not understood. You get sages like Sad Darshan, or six philosophical understandings of the Vedas that the greatest acharyas, you know, they misunderstand. That, oh, you know, the Vedas, it's, you know, it's karma mamamsa, or it's, you know, impersonal, or this, or that, or the other. So, Krishna has presented Bhagavad Gita, not just showing his actual understanding of the Vedas, which is not even understood by the great professors of Vedic knowledge, but he has then put it in a form which is an essential nutshell from beginning to the most highest aspect of Vedic knowledge, and then presented that in such a way that it can be distributed on the streets in Kali Yuga. So that's, you know, that's the intelligence of Krishna. And you can see also the intelligence of Krishna in that, you know, he is fully aware of, you know, as we talk in terms of, you know, a Manu living for 14, you know, the 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. Each one lives through, you know, or, you know, rules through 71 cycles of the four yugas. So, you know, Krishna spoke this Bhagavad Gita to the sun god. So 40 million years ago, we can see in the Gita, you know, Krishna is preparing, well, who should hear it so that it's properly disseminated? You know, his planning, his understanding, you know, his timing for presenting the Gita first, so it comes down through Manu. And therefore we see that in the Gita, even kings like Janaka were following the precepts of Gita, you know, showing how to act, always thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead while performing one's duties, and in that way become free from bondage and go back to Godhead. So this knowledge has been coming down since that time. So Krishna's, you know, even not just in the teachings of the Gita, but in the way he's allowed it to enter into this world, that timing, you know, with full understanding, you know, broad understanding of all the yugas and you know, who is managing like that. That intelligence we see in the Gita. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, so my point there was that, you know, what is in the Gita is Krishna is the only person who's given the full and proper understanding of everything that can be known in a very very readable, very acceptable fashion for everyone. So he says in the seventh chapter. Now, in the seventh chapter, he begins by saying that in the first verse he says, "Now hear, O son of Prita Arjun, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me." So, Krishna is saying that he explains that the absolute truth is Krishna. People are searching after the absolute truth in the Vedas. He says, look, your search is over. I am that person. Now, fix your mind on me and you'll know the absolute truth. Don't waste your time. So, and if you do that, you practice yoga, trying to connect with the absolute truth by thinking of me, you'll know me, the absolute truth, in full. Without doubt. So, and in that statement, of course, he's declaring that in the Bhagavad Gita, he presents that the way to fix your mind upon the personality of Godhead is to always think of Krishna. So we're going to think of someone, we think of Krishna. And if you, because Krishna is everything, you're thinking, there's nothing left out there. To become his devotee and to worship him and offer your respects to him. And so he's explaining that one should actually serve the personality of Godhead. That is the way that we think of Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says in Kali Yuga, the best way to always think of Krishna through service is to, you know, there's hearing, we hear that we should chant Hare Krishna, and then we chant Hare Krishna. So the best way, the most important way, the essential way is to chant the holy names of the Lord. So Krishna is saying, if you want to know me, you hear from me. That is the beginning. And hearing from me, I'm saying, become my devotee. Always think of me, become my devotee. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. And if you engage in devotional service, I will reveal myself to you. And he says, but those who do not engage in my devotional service, I will remain covered by the curtain of yoga maya. They will not understand me. So here we're seeing, how is it possible that these followers of Shiva and so many demigods for thousands of years study the same, you know, stories that we, you know, they know these stories backwards, you know, and frontwards and upside down and inside out. You start telling a story and they know all the stories. But there's not a trace of understanding. How is that possible? Because Krishna says it's possible if you actually serve the personality of Godhead, then you will know the absolute truth. Now, what happens here is that when people translate the scriptures, the impersonalists, they say, oh, we should meditate upon the absolute truth. Krishna is saying he is everything. So, all right, Gita is accepted, you know, as the greatest authority. Let us quote Gita then. That is a universal authority known all over the world. No one has excelled Krishna in you know, being famous for his being the ultimate authority in Gita. Let us quote Gita then. And when Krishna says, think of him, the absolute truth, our understanding is that it means that God, who is everywhere and everything and within everything, therefore you can think of God within anything. So Krishna doesn't say that. So, you know, in the... And that is why they cannot understand. Therefore, Krishna says in the third verse, he goes, he says, Manushyanam sahasrasu kaschit yadati siddhaya yatanam api siddhanam kaschin mambati tatvatahath. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavour for perfection. So they will study the scriptures of knowledge to try to understand what is my true self. What is, you know, do I have an eternal nature? He says, so especially Vedic knowledge is revered all over the world. For thousands and thousands of years, as far back in history as you go, when people, you know, thought of spiritual knowledge, you go to India. As long as people have known about India, they've understood that. If you want, you know, very elevated spiritual, you know, discussion, spiritual knowledge, you get that from India. That is the source. So this Vedic knowledge, even to this day, you know, Einstein, Adolf Hitler, Prabhupada quotes, they understood. No, they understood. You know, this is where you go. Even a demon like Adolf Hitler understood. You know, with all his pride and arrogance, he still understood, if you want knowledge, you've got to go through there, you've got to search the Vedas. Even a proud demon fool like that still had to admit, you've got to go there. Okay. So then Krishna says, and of those who have achieved perfection, they've studied, you know, especially the Vedic knowledge, they've understood Brahman, aham brahmasmi. I am eternal, I am not this body. I am an eternal, spiritual, living entity. He says, hardly one knows me in truth. So of all the people who have, you know, they're studying, this is, you know, they're actually studying the correct knowledge. They're studying the Vedas. The people here are saying that they're studying the prayers of Shiva. It's not as if, you know, they're worshipping Shiva as supreme and they haven't come across the Vedic knowledge. You know, they've actually studied all that Vedic knowledge, more so than us, quite often. But Krishna says, and he is the, you know, the authority. People understand he is the person to know above everything. Only he can know. You know, his understanding of Vedic knowledge and his expansive understanding, you know, universal understanding, which is beyond time and space, no one is a great authority. He is saying, take it from me, Arjuna, of, you know, I spoke to the sun god 40 million years ago. I do that sort of thing in each day of Brahma. I've seen Arjuna. I've seen for millenniums and millennium after millennium these people studying the Vedas, and I'll tell you, Arjuna, hardly anyone knows me. Who else has been around that long? Well, Lord Shiva. Not as long as Krishna, because actually he expands. From Krishna, everything comes from the cause of Shiva is Krishna. So, but here we see that Lord Shiva is acknowledging exactly what Krishna says. So he's saying that these siddhas, these perfect persons, these great jnanis and yogis, of the highest caliber, you'll find that they're rare. There's, you know, amongst millions of people, they're rare. But amongst all of those thousands and thousands, if you can find them, hardly one or two of them know me, in truth. So rare it is. Because Krishna says very clearly, unless one engages in devotional service, he does not reveal himself. By mental speculation, by philosophical research, even by study of the Vedas, using our speculative powers, the absolute truth, which is unlimited and inconceivable, cannot be grasped within our tiny little frog-like minds. That which is inconceivable and unlimited, if we try and try and try for, you know, millions and millions of lifetimes, we cannot grasp that within our tiny little minds. And what happens, of course, while the great jnanis and yogis are trying to do that, as Brahma's day comes to an end, they're all annihilated. And then again, they try again, perhaps in the next day. That is. But Krishna says, if one engages in my devotional service, then they can very easily understand the absolute truth. So Krishna gives the process. If you think of me and engage as a devotee in relationship with me, you will know me because I will manifest within your heart the full transcendental knowledge of the absolute truth. In other words, you know, if the just like the sun, you know, we get the example of the sun. We have to wait for the sun to appear in order to, you know, for everything to be revealed. You know, when it's darkness, we can't see ourselves. You know, we can't perform activities. We can't see others. Everything is just black. We can't understand anything. When the sun appears, then everything is revealed. But we can't create that. If the sun doesn't rise, we can't artificially create that situation. So, Krishna says, if you think of me, so in this same chapter, previous to this, Krishna has said straight out that in verse number 30. Okay. Krishna said straight out, verse 29, a true yogi observes me and all beings. So Krishna is within everyone. And also sees every being in me. So everyone is existing. You know, we are, as Prabhupada gives the example, you know, he said, you know, I'm sitting on this asana. So I'm resting on this, which is basically an energy. So we're all, you know, resting on Krishna's energy like that. Everything is resting on Krishna's energy. And at the same time, Krishna is within everyone. He says, indeed, the self-realized person sees me, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, above Shiva, above Brahma, above everyone, everywhere. So, now, here, you see that Prabhupada explains that. Now, when those who don't take up devotional service to Krishna, the impersonalists, because they must remain impersonalists as long as they don't accept Krishna as a person and therefore, you know, refuse to serve him. Why should they serve Krishna, who they consider an ordinary person. But then you have to ask the question, if you won't serve Krishna because he's an ordinary person, so therefore you won't take up devotional service considering it material, why are you quoting Bhagavad Gita? why quote the book of someone you consider to be materially manifested? That, so the whole thing just doesn't make sense. So it's like that. So, but Krishna very clearly, so therefore they shouldn't poke their nose into it at all. What to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam. When they say that when Krishna says he is within everything and everyone, therefore he's the absolute truth, the supreme impersonal absolute truth is within Shiva. The supreme impersonal absolute truth is within Durga. The supreme absolute truth is within Kali, within the sun god, within you, within me. Therefore, don't limit yourself to serving Krishna. In fact, why even bother? Any path you follow, if you follow the path of Shiva, you get the same result because Krishna is within Shiva. It's the same thing, the absolute truth. In fact, you are also Narayan. Why even bother going to the temples? You know, I think Vivekananda, when he came here, was it late 1800s or something? Very early on, he went to New York, and he was saying that he caused an uproar. Why are you going to the churches and the temples? You know, God is within you, as we said. You know, and they still follow that sort of philosophy. So that's the. But the, you know, the proper understanding is that just like yesterday was Father's Day, and you know, when people see the children of the father, they see, oh, I see the father. You know, I've got five daughters, and you know, every time, you know, if I'm talking to my mum or something, they say, oh, you know, she's got your eyes, you know, she's got your, you know, this part of your nature, you know, this one's got like that. So unless something exists in the absolute truth, it cannot exist within us. So, you know, Krishna is how Prabhupada, one of the ways that Prabhupada explained it. The Supreme Father, we're a person. Unless and that is our eternal nature. That's what is described in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, your eternal, you know, that eternal self, that's your nature. And Krishna explains very, very clearly in the Gita, myself, Krishna, all these kings, Arjuna, all these, you know, we're all individuals. I'm me, you know. Krishna is explaining himself, I, Krishna, I am, I know everything in the past, everything at present, and everything in the future, I know all of that. But describing the living entity, all the others, he speaks about them in different ways. You know, they're a tiny part, they're an atomic spiritual particle of his spiritual energy. So Krishna is Vibhu, he's omniscient, all-knowing. He describes himself that way, but he doesn't describe all other living entities that way. He describes them completely different. I am all-knowing. He says, even those who return to the spiritual abode, who may be called infallible, I am also their, you know, Supreme Lord. They all manifest from me. Like that. So he speaks in those terms. Here, even you know, this Vedic knowledge, Lord Shiva, he's explaining this Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so Bhagavad Gita is explaining by Krishna himself, the absolute truth, you meditate upon me as an eternal person, the all-knowing supreme person, who is non-different from Vishnu, the super soul within the heart of every living entity, which is another way the Lord exists within everyone. He exists as the Vishnu, the super soul of the entire material energy. And therefore, when he glances at the material energy, it is by his glance as the Supreme Lord, the controller of the material energy, he understands fully that here is a material energy, I can set it into motion. It emanates from me as a reflection or a shadow of my eternal spiritual potency. Just like the sun creates the darkness and the shadow. But the sun is always... the shadow and the light. The sun creates both. But the sun is always in light, although it's created both. God creates the effulgent, Satchitananda, conscious, spiritual energy. He is the cause of that. And also the material energy, which is like a little shadow. But the Supreme Lord is never covered by the shadow of the material energy. He always exists in full knowledge, vibhu, omniscient. The Supreme Lord is always described as being all-knowing in all scriptures. But those who come to this material world and who are covered by ignorance, anyone who becomes covered by ignorance, even for a moment, is not God. Because for all time, in all places, in all circumstances, God is all-knowing. As soon as we fall from that platform, just for a second, no one saw, we're not God. And that is the definition of God in all liturgies. The all-knowing, supreme, Father. Who can claim to be that person? Look at his knowledge. That as a super soul, he glances at the material energy and he knows that I know how to set this into motion. And there'll be full creation. That's his knowledge. He knows that he impregnates the living entities within the material energy. And the material energy, agitated by his glance, the three modes of material nature become agitated and begin to interact with each other. The Lord then... as he breathes. So we said that one day of Brahma is 4,300,000,000 years. One day, his night is like that. Now 100 years in that time is the life of Brahma, which is the same as the life of the universe. In one breath, that whole creation comes and goes. That's God. Not that... Now, you have that sort of creative power, not that, you have the false gods in it, here's a little gold. Or, the tiny little gold there. Or here's a Seiko watch. that is God. Can you produce a sun? Well, you don't have the eyes to see. But yes, I can. So, and then those universal seeds which emanate from the body of Mahavishnu, his form, they enter within the material energy and they are covered by different layers. The universe, because of the interaction of the modes of material nature, the different coverings of the universes are there. And then he enters within the universal shell of each universe as Vishnu. And from his the water that emanates from his body, from the perspiration, he lays on like the Garbhadaka ocean, which fills half the universe. There he lays on the bed of Ananta Sesha. Lakshmi is massaging his lotus feet. And a lotus flower grows from his navel, and the first living entity is created is Brahma. Within that lotus stem, all the living entities are there. So they've been, you know, placed within the material universe, but then as Mahavishnu enters each universe, the universe, in each universe, certain living entities in one universe, in the lotus stem, another universe, similarly, like that. So they're placed in different universes. Then Brahma, that lotus stem, is also the, you know, the subtle blueprint of the universe, which Lord Brahma completes as a secondary creator, giving abodes and bodies and, you know, everything for all the different living entities that are within that universe. And then that Vishnu, again, he expands within the heart of each and every living entity, and also within each and every atom. So this Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, now Lord Shiva, he's meditating upon him. Lord Shiva can't do that. Lord Shiva is such a great personality. He is so great that, you know, it's no wonder that people worship him as supreme. But he's very close to the supreme. But he is acknowledging that supreme knowledge by which the sun is placed in a certain part of this universe and for billions and billions of years regulates the life on different planets perfectly, rising at the same time. You know, the sun is, you know, we often chant the Gayatri meditation, which can be, you know, it's our first understanding in one sense of God, because I understand there's something very wonderful about that sun. You know, it just burns for billions of years, you know. It just burns and burns and burns and burns. You know, I light a lot of fires. I know you've got to keep putting wood on it. You think to yourself, who's giving fuel to that sun, you know, for so long? How do you keep a fire going for so long? Like, you'd think, okay, if a fire burned for 100 years, really? No, that can never happen. Yes. 1,000 years. 1 billion years. You've got to be joking. How is that even possible? Okay, all right. All right, there's a lot of fuel, you know. No. Really? Self-fueled. A self-fueled fire. Now, if I can get one of them, that would save me a lot of chopping. A self-fueling fire, right? Now, sometimes, you know, when you put fuel on a fire, all of a sudden you get a lot of heat all at once and then it just dies down, a lot of smoke. Sun? No. Burning at the same temperature. Millions and millions of years. There's something, you know, we're getting a bit suspicious. You know, that's not quite accidental. That's just phenomenal. You know, that's a design. That's a perfect design. And then rising. So it's not just burning. It's not just roaming around the universe disintegrating everything. It's in a place where it doesn't hurt anything in the universe. It stays there, rises, and from that we get everything. That intelligence, Lord Shiva is saying, don't look at me. I'm not that person. I'm meditating on that person. Who is that? That is Vishnu. That is why I put the dust of Hari, Vishnu, on my head. Because that's not me doing that. It is described in all the scriptures. Not Shiva doing that, it is Vishnu doing that. So, and Lord Shiva is saying, he is supreme. Because, you know, from the lotus stem comes Brahma, from Brahma comes Shiva. So before Shiva, Shiva is saying, all this happened before I even got here. Don't look at me as the absolute truth, the cause of all causes, because all this happened before I got here. And you want to know the cause? It was a vision. And who is Vishnu? Krishna explains. So, but he's saying that It came from that person. He's actually got a body. You know, Vishnu, don't think that me and Vishnu are the same. I've got this body and I don't have the knowledge he has. He's a different person with a greater level of knowledge and a different body. But what sort of body is that? It's not the body like our body. The universe came from it. Did it come from it like in a really reckless sort of way and Lord Vishnu blew up? And no. It's like this beautiful lotus stem, you know, the universe come. It's not like one of our factories, you know. So we try to create anything. We've got pollution, we wreck the rivers, we wreck the air. Lord Vishnu, you expect God to do that? He's got a big factory in the sky putting out universes of pollution in the rest of the, you know, everywhere. No, he lays down, beautiful lotus flower comes. You'd expect that from God, though, wouldn't you? You wouldn't expect anything less, you know, a big mess, something incomplete. So Lord Shiva is meditating. That form, it's a form. Don't think that it is something wonderful, something not wonderful, you know. The whole universe came just from his navel, just effortlessly. Beautiful lotus comes and then Brahma comes and then everyone else comes like that. That is God. That's who I'm meditating on. When I, you know, sit in meditation for years and years and years, that's who I'm meditating upon. And that's who you should meditate upon. If you want to follow me, don't imitate me by sitting smoking in ganja and then, you know, speculating on all the scriptures, loafing around, you know, like a what have you. Don't do that. You take up devotional service, as Krishna says in the Gita, 24 hours a day, and you have this faith that if you serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because in this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm the Absolute Truth, and then the Srimad Bhagavatam expands that. What Krishna says is the Absolute Truth. So then we hear in 12 cantos to expand that understanding. What Krishna said is the Absolute Truth. Oh, here's a nice pastime where Lord Shiva explains that. Here's a nice pastime where this happens. And so much knowledge to confirm, which is coming from Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Vedas. When Krishna says he's the, you know, the Absolute Truth, the source of everything, here. You've got 700 verses in the Gita. If you've got any doubts, here's another 18,000 verses spoken by all the greatest personalities that will confirm what Krishna is saying. And then you read the 10th... Krishna says that, but we see him dancing with other people's wives, dancing with the gopis. No, he's definitely an ordinary person. I don't care what you say. You read the Srimad Bhagavatam properly, hear it from a Vaishnava, and you'll understand that those gopis, they're not just ordinary people either. That the Supreme Lord, he's interacting with his devotees and his own spiritual personified potencies. So that is not ordinary activity. And there is no, it appears like sex life, but have another look. It's not sex life. In fact, you know, Prabhupada says, he says, you know, people ask, is there sex in Vaikuntha? Prabhupada says, no, you know, because they're so busy enjoying in the association of the Supreme Lord, they're surprised that we even think that's happiness. So, you know, therefore, you know, the greatest yogi, Lord Shiva, the greatest of the yogis, they're meditating upon Krishna, the personality of Godhead, to attain that transcendental bliss, eternal transcendental blissful position. Why would that person they're meditating upon be coming to the material world to engage in sex life? So you read the Srimad Bhagavatam and you'll understand you are very much mistaken. And therefore, when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you surrender unto him and everything will be complete. Everything will be done by the grace of God. Your economic problem will be done. Your, you know, birth, death, old age and disease problem will be finished. Your social, political problem all the problems that you can think of in your tiny little frog-like brain will all be finished if you can just engage in the service of Krishna. So when he says that, don't take it lightly. And this is what we're hearing from Lord Shiva in this pastime. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Oh. No, I'll ask the back again. We'll try and go for the... it's an etiquette. We try and, you know, the senior persons, although you ask really good questions, but and so do you, but I'm going to ask you first. Yep.
Well, I have two questions. One is, when we are talking with Shaivites, and when we present Krishna's supremacy, they're quoting Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of the scripture references they quote is Shiva Purana, and then they say that Lord Shiva says that he is the supreme now. Obviously, I have not read it, but is it Lord Shiva saying that he is the supreme, or is it the devotees of Lord Shiva saying that he is supreme? And how do we?
Lord Shiva is unique among the demigods, because whereas the spirit soul, we can become, if we perform very pious activities for many hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, we get really good karma, we can go to the heavenly planets and we can become Indra, we can become, most of the demigods, most of the demigods. But we can't become Vishnu, we can't become Durga or Shiva, because Shiva and Durga's position is that when Vishnu, when he has intimate contact with the material energy, so when Vishnu doesn't actually intimately associate with material energy, he's always enjoying spiritual bliss in the spiritual energy. But when Vishnu does intimately associate, because he can, and he doesn't at the same time, that's inconceivable. How does he do that? How does he not associate with material energy, and yet he's got to be intimately connected with it for it all to happen? How does he do that? When he intimately connects with the material energy, he expands his form as Shiva, so that he's the master of the material energy, who is Durga Devi, and at the same time as Vishnu, I'm not touching it, it's Shiva. But Shiva is, non-different from Vishnu. He's not a living entity, but his position is different from Vishnu in that Shiva intimately associates with the material energy. Now, if Shiva intimately associates with the material energy, do you think we will find that in the spiritual world? No. There's no, if someone here, on this planet, the business is, somehow working to do with the darkness, will they find work on the sun if they went to the sun? There's no darkness. We get people who deal with the clouds. They study the clouds and the storms and everything like that. Well, if they go above the clouds, are they going to find anything to do? There's no clouds. The clouds are... So Shiva has nothing to do in the spiritual world. Nor Durga. They are like the... a shadow or... So Shiva is supreme. You can say... It's not wrong to say that Shiva is supreme. It's not wrong. Because... His Vishnu, but the form of Shiva is Vishnu intimately associating with the material energy, which he does not do in the spiritual world. And even Vishnu, the super soul, in his original position in the spiritual world, he's not Shiva, he's Narayana. So in his original position, Lord Shiva is Vishnu. And in his in Vishnu's original position, the spiritual world is Narayana. So, therefore, the original form of Shiva is Narayana. And therefore, if we want to meditate upon Shiva in his feature of the Absolute Truth, we meditate upon Narayana, not Shiva. We meditate upon Shiva in his relationship with that which is not the Absolute Truth. But Lord Shiva, like any guru, can teach the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and teach you exactly what Vishnu teaches, exactly what Krishna teaches. He can teach that. You know, here I am sitting on the asana trying to, you know, speak what I've heard through my spiritual master, representative of Srila Prabhupada, you know, what I've heard from Srila Prabhupada, read in his books. In one sense, I'm acting as a guru, although, you know, very on a very low level. I mean, way as low as you can get. Looking up, real gurus. But if I can do that and point the way to the Absolute Truth by speaking Gita and Bhagavatam without changing it, then certainly Lord Shiva can also do that so much better than, you know, I can. So he can, by following Lord Shiva, we can attain the Absolute Truth. And by attaining the Absolute Truth, we do what Krishna says and we engage in devotional service to the Absolute Truth in his personal feature. And Lord Shiva, he's offering prayers. So there's 9 items of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, you know, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord. Of course, here, Lord Shiva, you know, he's meditating upon the navel. You know, because what's below the navel? You've got the knees, you know, the thighs, and somewhere down there you've got the feet. Not like there's this prayer is to the navel. It's not like there's a navel up in space without any arms and legs, what have you. You know, it's connected to a body. He's meditating upon the form, including the lotus feet. He's gone from the lotus feet and gradually. So we follow that example of Lord Shiva to meditate upon the personal feature of the Lord as the cause of material creation, although he existed before creation. So we follow, and that is the teachings of Lord Shiva. That's how you follow Lord Shiva, is by following his example. What is he doing? Lord Shiva, one may meditate upon Lord Shiva as supreme, and Lord Shiva is supreme in the sense that his original feature on the spiritual platform is not him associating with the material energy, but his feature as Vishnu, who is his cause. So he's one with Vishnu. Therefore, he's supreme. And he's saying, if you want to serve Vishnu, this is in the Bhagavatam, which leads you to the conclusion, if you want to serve Vishnu, serve Krishna. The original form, the source of even Vishnu. So these are the teachings of Shiva. And so if we can accept Shiva as supreme, because he is different from the living entities, yet he is saying, although I am one with Vishnu, you know, his form in the material world has been, you know, there's a cause beyond that, greater than him, and you should really go there, and there you will find that he is one with Vishnu, and that is the form to meditate upon. Therefore, who is Lord Shiva? That's my second question. I asked the first question. What is Lord Shiva meditating upon? He meditates upon Sankarshan. Sankarshan, so we said that Lord Vishnu is Lord Narayan, or God, when he's looking after the material world, but he does it without really intimately associating with material energy. But when he wants to associate closely with material energy, he expands as Shiva. So that is... but his original form is Narayan, when he's not looking after the material world. So when he's not looking after the material world, he's actually Narayan. And that Narayan is also has a personal form described in the scriptures. Now this is, you know... Now where there's no material energy anywhere, there's no Shivas, there's no Brahma, there's no, nothing like that. This is Vaikuntha, existing purely on the spiritual energy. And there is Narayan, and he manifests in four features, as Vasudeva, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarshan. Sankarshan is a form of Narayan who specifically awards the eternal identity to all living entities. So you are an eternal individual person, and that is Sankarshan, that is his unlimited prowess, Lord, that he can manifest. He is the cause of unlimited, by his spiritual energy, individuals who are eternally individuals and have their own unique identity to any other of the unlimited individuals. He maintains that. He's the cause of that, and he maintains that. Nothing can interfere. When the living entity comes into the material world, our identity is covered by a material entity. And therefore, Sankarshan, who Lord Shiva derives his potencies from, because you know he is connected with Narayan specifically through that form of Sankarshan. And is Lord Shiva who is responsible for giving the false identities in the material world. So it's the same business. So, therefore, Lord Shiva is always praying to Lord Sankarshan because he is empowered to do the work on behalf of Sankarshan, but in the material world. That these living entities, their eternal identity will not be lost, but it will be temporarily covered by false identities. So, but Sankarshan could do it, but as we said, Narayan and Vishnu, they don't intimately associate. But as Shiva, he does. So, he is always meditating upon the form of the Lord in different eternal personal forms. So in one sense it's not wrong to say that Lord Shiva is supreme, but we do have to understand that his form as Shiva is a form that is manifest in the material business, and that if we want to get the benefits of Lord Shiva from the spiritual platform to engage as an eternal spirit soul in blissful pastimes in the spiritual world, we then have to follow the teachings of Lord Shiva to go to the cause, you know, his cause, who he is one with. So we actually then have to meditate upon Vishnu. So, in other words, if we meditate upon Vishnu, we're not betraying Shiva. It's the same person. That's his spiritual identity. You know, people think, oh, you know, if I give up, we've worshipped Shiva for millions of years, as far back as generations go. We can't give up this worship of Lord Shiva. You're not. Lord Shiva is explaining that his original form is Vishnu. Therefore, he's supreme. But don't meditate. If you want to meditate him as Shiva, stay in the material world because he's not in the spiritual world. You won't find any yogis. You won't find a lord of destruction in a lord of war, you know, Karakaya, you know, in the spiritual world. So if you want to keep meditating on Shiva or Vishnu in his Shiva manifestation, stay in the material world and meditate on it. But you won't find him in the spiritual world. If you do want to get to the spiritual world, you have to meditate upon Shiva in his original Vishnu Narayan form, and because he is one with that personality, that's Shiva's original. You know, and Durga's original identity is Lakshmi, the spiritual energy, the consort of Narayan, of Vishnu. So if you want to go to the spiritual world, you're not betraying Shiva, you're just getting to the real feature of Shiva. We have to get to the real, you know, just like this universe has a soul, we have a soul. If you want to get to the original soul, you must, you know, trace back. So you want to get to the soul of Shiva, you have to go to Vishnu and Narayan. Then you get the real thing. So yes, he's supreme, but he's saying there's something more free from the material energy that you should meditate on me in this way. All right. Thank you very much. Yep. Oh, yes, your question. Geez, patient. Yeah. He's always got good questions, actually.
Why do we keep the shika?
Why do we keep
the shika?
The shika? Yeah. Well, I have heard so that, you know, Krishna can, you know, get our shika and pull us up, you know, out of material existence. But actually, what it really does is it distinguishes us from impersonalists. So impersonalists who don't believe God is a person, that personal form is material, they don't keep a shika. So we're studying the same books. We don't want people to think, oh, they've also got a shaved head. Yes, but we've got the shika. That means we're devotees. So when people see that without the shika, they are impersonalists, and they see with the shika, they say, oh, Vaishnava. And this shika, this area, of course, is the Brahma Rundram. it's a very important, you know, when yogis or great personalities leave their body, they actually burst through this Brahma Rundram, you know. They block all the holes of their body with their heels and everything, and then they come through that point. So it's a protected area, a sacred area of the head. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question. One at a time.
Oh, yes. So, yes, I didn't see your hand. Okay.
Sorry.
Here we go.
Yep.
You mentioned that within the stem of the word flower is the design of the universe.
Hmm.
Can you give the reference, please?
Yeah, it's in other words, in a very subtle way, in a very infant stage, the universe is there within the stem of the lotus. So Brahma's got something to work with.
Yeah. Where did you read it?
In the Bhagavatam.
Thank you.
But yeah. So I can't remember exactly where I'm just... Yeah. But it's in the Bhagavatam. That's what I read, yeah.
Thank you.
So in a very immature stage, almost like a blueprint stage, it's sort of there, but it really needs to be someone to come in and actually make it its gross manifestation and like that. So, you know, Brahma does that. So he's not necessarily starting from scratch, Brahma. he's been given a lot to work with.
If Lord Krishna is in Lord Shiva, then why do we say Lord Shiva is a devotee of Krishna?
If Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, is within Shiva,
what is the question?
Yeah, why do we say Shiva is a devotee of Krishna? Yeah, well, because Lord Shiva is the son, and Vishnu or Krishna is the father. So, you know, if people see you, they will say, "Oh, I can see your father in you, your eyes, you've got the nose, your character, you know. I see a bit of your mother in you as well, like that." So, so many qualities we do get from the mother and father, but you remain the son. Mother and father remain individual as well. So Lord Shiva remains the son of God, you know, one of the sons of God. So Krishna is within him because Lord Shiva in the Nectar Devotion describes that he has, you know, what is it, 76 or 86%, or 76 is it? Was it 86? 86% of the qualities that are there within Krishna. Lord Brahma has less. But amongst living entities like us, he has the same as us, but fully. So we can have as many qualities are there in Krishna, even up to the point of Lord Brahma, in full. We have some of the qualities of Krishna, a little bit. So we have some knowledge, but we don't know much beyond our own body and like that. Lord Brahma, his knowledge, he knows everything within the universe. So we can actually know up to that, but we can never know what's in every universe and what's in the whole spiritual. That's Krishna, he has. So we can have but to be knowing is one of the qualities of Krishna. So we also have one of those. And Brahma has that quality of knowing better than other living entities in this universe. Although Lord Shiva knows, he has the ability of being omniscient, so all-knowing, to a greater degree than even Brahma. So because we have the qualities of Krishna within us, so many different qualities, therefore Krishna is within us. Krishna is also, but we remain the son, or you know, the children of God. And he always remains the father. So Lord Shiva sees himself as the, you know, he took birth in this universe, basically through Vishnu's creation. So he sees him as the supreme father. And so he's always a devotee. But Lord Vishnu is the super soul, even within the heart of Shiva. So just as God is within our heart, actually Lord Shiva meditates so that through his heart, God who is there gives him the realization of how to perform his duty and to always be fixed in his, not to be affected by the material energy, although he always has to deal with it for that. So he's also taking guidance from Krishna, who's within the heart. So Krishna's within everyone, even Lord Shiva, guiding them.
Just wanted to give you some kudos. If you do a search on the lotus stem in Srimad-Bhagavatam and Vaidhyaports, it's this text that comes up.
What's that?
It's this report. Yep. The whole universe is born out of the lotus stem.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Which verse is that?
This one.
Right, there you go. So, it says the coils within the navel of the Lord are so deep that it appears the entire universe sprouted out of it and yet again wishes to go back. So when it's saying it appears, we know it definitely appears, but it's appearing to want to go back because the Lord's navel is so beautiful like that. So this verse, that's very interesting. Very nice, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have light bulbs and torch and electricity, but if there was no sun, would we have those things? There. Actually, all our activities, depend upon the sun and the sunshine. Yeah. So even the little limitations, the energy we're borrowing from the sun, and our ability to make little artificial light and what have you, still we need the sun just to do any of that. Okay? John, all those are the problems.